One. Hey, what's up, guys? We have Happy here. He is a professional poker player. So what's going on, Happy? How you doing today?
What's up, man? Just finished a short session before I got in this call.
Yeah, so can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I'm 34. I live in California. I've been playing professionally for 5 years now. I play mainly live poker.
Okay, so yeah, me and Happy, and hopefully I don't say your name at all, but me and Happy just planned this like 15 minutes ago, so we're both probably a little unprepared, but I like to get, you know, I don't know, I like to do these types of last minute sessions, and I've been looking to get like a professional poker player on, and he posted on the Reddit AMA. So for anyone to ask him anything about poker, professional poker, I have a lot of questions. So first of all, I know you just went to Vietnam, right? What did you go to Vietnam for?
Oh, I was just on vacation. I live with my family, and my dad wanted to fix his teeth, and it's cheaper over there. It's really expensive here. So mostly was just to fix his teeth. And then he's like, you want to come? I'm like, yeah, sure.
Okay, cool. And then, so as far as the poker goes, like when did you get your start? How long have you been playing? How long have you been playing pro? All that kind of stuff.
So I found out about the game when I was like 18. I was going to college at the time, but I knew like, oh, this is what I want. Because like when I was 10, I wanted to play. I just loved the casino for some reason. When I got there, I'm like, I want to gamble for a living, man. I thought about this when I was young. So when I found out about poker, it's like, oh shit, this game requires a lot of skills and you can actually win if you get good. So I'm like, all right, I want to play this. So I knew about the game when I was 18. I was just, you know, a fish like everybody else, is burning my money online through sit and goes and stuff. During college, after school, I would just play some home games and get started there. And then up until when I was around like 2015 was when I really took the game serious. Like I was like, all right, I'm going to really try to get good at this game. So I remember I had like $30 in my account. I'm like, all right, I can only play no limit two, because then I'll have like, I have 15 buy-ins, right? So I started playing no limit two. Built the bankroll slowly, jumped to do no limit 5, 10, and then 25. And then after that, I started taking shots at the live game. And I was just driving Uber at the time. And whenever I have like $500, I'll go to the casino and I'll start playing. And if I win, I stop driving and I just start playing and trying to focus. But at this time, I was living with my parents too. So, you know, the rent and shit was paid for. So it didn't really like affect me, so I could climb faster. Yeah.
Okay. And right now you live up in Northern California, right?
Yep.
Is it like San Francisco area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sacramento.
Okay. So I don't know if you want to say where you play live, but would you say that you play more live or online?
Yeah. I play mainly to live poker for the majority of the time. I play at Stone's Gambling Hall in Thunder Valley mostly.
Yeah. Okay, and you play 2-5, 5-10?
Yeah, at Stone's, they have this 1-3 game, but it's very deep stack. Like, you buy in, not like your standard one. It's $500 buy-in in the beginning. And then as soon as somebody just doubles up, I'll just top up with them, and the game is very deep. Sometimes you'll have like multiple $1,000 stacks or even $2,000 stacks, and you can just match them right away. And then if you have like a group of action players, we'll put straddles on, which makes the games effectively 1-3-6. So it's a very big 1-3. It's like a 2-5, and I play that mainly. If the 2-5 runs, I'll play that too. But then when we play 2-5, most of the time it's going to have a straddle on, so then the 2-5 is going to be like a 2-5-10. Yeah.
Okay. And about how much do you make doing that?
So I started keeping track since 2018, and according to my all the hours I've played, I'm averaging $45 an hour since the start, over a sample size of like 5,000 something hours. Yeah,
that's good. And you're playing like 40 hours a week or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mostly I'll just wake up around 11, 12. I go to the casino and I'll play to like 8, 9. Sometimes I'll play like 10 hours a session if like the games are really good. And then some days, you know, I wouldn't play. Some months I'll play like 200 hours. And then sometimes I'll get burnt out and I'll stop playing. But I try to make it 40 an hour, 40 a week. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then I just remembered Stones is where like the whole Mike Postle thing went down.
Yeah,
right? So were you there during that period?
Actually, so I played with Mike Postle a couple times on stream too, once. During 2019, I went back to Vietnam for like 9 months. It was way too long. But before I before like I was gonna come back to America, that's when the Mike Postle incident happened. Like when everything got out, and then I came back like right at that time too. So yeah, I was there.
Okay, how was it playing with him? Like, could you tell something was up with what he was doing, or?
So, first, like, came to the casino. I played with him off stream once, and then when he started winning on stream, I remember my friend was
the audio. The audio. Sorry, the audio is getting a little bit weird.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think I put my hand on the mic. Are we good now?
Yeah, yeah.
So when I started playing with this guy, when he first started showing up and started winning on stream, I remember my friend was telling me, oh, this is a pro. And from what I was playing, like from my experience playing with him, like from the start, I told my friend, I'm like, no, dude, he's just a fish on a heater right now. Like the way he's playing, the hand selections he's using, no pro uses those hand selections, you know, like three betting with fucking 5-7 offsuit. Like that's not a thing. So when he started winning, I was just like, he's just a fish on a heater. Like that's why I thought. I never thought he was a pro, to be honest. So when the cheating came out, I was like, yep, pretty obvious.
So you believe you're pretty sure that he actually was cheating? It wasn't just like some sort of like luck based thing?
No, it's 100% cheating. Like there's a lot of hands where only cheating you can do. Like I remember one hand where two guy had ace king. And one guy raised, another guy three bets. He cold calls the three bet with his 5-4 offsuit. And then the other guy goes on in. The guy with ace king goes on in, and he fucking calls with 5-4 offsuit.
Yeah, I know that hand. Yeah,
yeah. Like he has to know they both have ace king, and he knows his equity is good versus both ace kings to call.
Yeah,
like, yeah. You can't make that call without knowing the cards. Like. They can easily, one of them can have pocket jacks and then you're fucked, you know?
Yeah, that's still such a weird situation because it's like, it just feels like if you're going to pick a spot to cheat, it just seems like that's, even that situation is like somewhat too close. Like, is he even actually ahead there? I don't even know if he is. It's like really close.
He is ahead there, yeah. He's slightly ahead. But that's not just the only hand. He has fucking 10-100 hands. Okay, yeah. There's this one hand that is cheating for sure. So this hand, he does not see his opponent's cards. His opponents are in. He's calling with fucking middle pair. And his opponent has like two low cards. So he's dead, almost dead, right? The turn comes, giving the other guy a gut shot. And he goes, oh shit. You scared me, bro. He said that to the dealer. Not realizing the guy's card is fucking face down.
Yeah.
So the guy's card is actually face down.
Yeah.
He turns a gut shot and he's like, oh shit, you scared me. Not realizing nobody knows the guy's cards but you, dude. Right.
Yeah. Like, so the fact that the gut shot came. Like scared him, which is like weird. It's now he actually has a chance to beat me, and
right, exactly.
I somehow realize what he has. Yeah. So in terms of we know that Mike Postle is cheating. I've seen a bunch of his hands. What about the Robbie Jade Garrett Adelson thing? Do you think that she was cheating? What do you think about that situation?
No, actually, I don't think she cheated. because if she was cheating, we would find more hands prior to that that shows some kind of, you know, fraud play, but there isn't. And what I believe is she's just a very bad player. And that specific hand, she thought she had Jack 3. And she just wanted to calm down because she thought he was bluffing a lot. And I think she thought she had a pair. And then when the showdown happened, she just like, oh, shit, I have Jack 4. Oh, shit, I won. Oh, shit, I'm not going to tell anybody. You know, kind of embarrassed.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I didn't really think she was cheating. And even if she was, I don't think there was enough, you know, evidence. Like you said, there was no prior hands. And I don't think there's been any other hands since. And it's like a lot of just really bad players will make mistakes like that. Like she could have just been nervous in the situation and misread her hand. And just it was like so much money that she just like lost it. And like,
right.
Yeah. So, so my main thing is that like, so I was playing a lot of poker for a while. I'll start and stop. And I feel like I do pretty good at the casino. The problem with the casino is that, you know, I have a girlfriend and I have, you know, a full-time job and it's like hard to get to the casino. And I feel like I can probably beat the casino. I just can't be there 40 hours a week. I mean, unless I literally just am like, okay, this is now my full-time job, which probably wouldn't go over well with her and whoever else. So, I don't know. I feel like the playing live is like relatively easy. It's just kind of like you go, like you play your hands straight up, you play a good range, you play solid, not necessarily straight up, but you know what I mean? Like you can bluff obviously, but like just playing solid essentially. Online has been a completely different story for me. And I mentioned this to you a little bit beforehand.
Right.
And you said like, even at the lower stakes, like the $5 stakes, there's people playing from different countries. So $5 is a lot of money to them. But then we also mentioned the app games too. So I'm kind of just wondering in terms of strategy and also, do you play online really much at all anymore? You told me that you were playing on that Vietnamese, that Chinese app or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just want to talk about online and live, how it's different, and why it's harder for a little bit.
Yeah.
So online, the smallest stake you can find is usually like 2 cent, 5 cent, 5 cent, 10 cent.
Yeah,
and 10, 25 cents. So once you get to the level of $1, $2, that's moving up like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like 6 stakes, right? Whereas live poker, the cheapest you can play is $1, $2. So 1, 2 at live poker, that's the first stage. Like people that just found out how to play, they can't play anywhere else. They can't play cheaper if they want to play. They have to play 1, 2. So there's a lot of fish at 1, 2 in the live arena, whereas the fish is online. They'll play 1 cent, 2 cent, 2 cent, 5 cent, you know, to get started. That's why like online is way tougher.
Yeah.
That
makes sense. And like somebody who online would be playing 2 cent, 5 cent just has to play 1, 2 live. And
right. Exactly.
Yeah. It's a very weird thing. I've always kind of been like, why is it so? Yeah. I mean, you've explained it a little bit, but it's like,
right.
The difference in, I mean, it's almost like every player I play with live just seems to be like bad, and every player I play with online seems to be bad. But then I even get into situations where I'm like, oh, that was like a terrible move by this person online, but like it somehow still manages to, it always seems to like fuck me one way or the other, like whether or not I'm feel like I'm outplaying the person or not online. It's just like, I'm not one of those conspiracy theorists who thinks that there's, I think that there is cheating online, but I don't think the whole thing is a scam.
Right.
I think it is probably beatable. Like there are people who are beating it, but I guess just in terms of, I mean, so you're not playing much at all online now, right?
So yeah, right now, like I told you, I was playing on the Vietnamese app. So I'm incorporating that into my normal grind now. That's only been starting for last month when I went back to Vietnam, because it's illegal in Vietnam to play poker, cash games. So my friend who I knew for a long time, he's running like a club online, like the GG apps and stuff, but it's a Vietnamese app. So I started playing there last month. Like I told you, you know, I'm up like 7K, 8K now on that app. So the app is pretty soft. It's not like super soft, but it's softer than you can find like on a regular site like Bovada or America's card room. Like I couldn't make 7K on Bovada or ACR playing 1-2, you know, it's too hard.
Yeah. Did you have any experience? Have you had any experience playing on those other Bovada?
Yeah. So Ignition? I've been grinding the No Limit Zoom games on Ignition, Bovada, just to really like sharpen up my skills, because one table Zoom, you can play 200 and something hands, and I'm doing two tables. So I get in like, you know, 5,000 hands in 10 hours, you know, and that's a lot of practice. So I've been dabbling in that. I have like a sample size of like 300 hours, which is roughly like 100K hands. And I'm winning by 1.5 big blinds for 100 hands. And to get put that into perspective for live poker, I'm winning at like 40 something big blinds per 100 hand in live poker. We're online, it's only 1.5 big blinds and 100 hands. And I'm proud of it. Like, I'm hella happy now. I'm even beating it.
Yeah. So how much money is that that you're up online?
That's like 1,500 to 1,800, some small number like that.
Over the course of, could you say 300 hours?
Yeah.
And how much, what timeline is that? How long were you playing that for?
Like, it was over this whole 2022. Like in like January, I put in like 80 hours, and then February I put in like 40 hours. In the beginning, I was winning, like I was up like 8K, so I was doing more hours, and then gradually I just started losing, and so I started playing more live, and then recently I started playing more a little bit again. So yeah, around 300 hours throughout the whole year.
This was okay. And this was 1-2?
Yeah, 1-2 Zoom.
1-2 Zoom, yeah. So I played a little bit of 1-2 Zoom, because as, I don't know if Bovada is the same as Ignition. When I was playing, I was playing on Ignition. I don't really
like it. Yeah, it's the same player pool.
Yeah. So I wanted to play Zoom. I wanted to play 100 Zoom, but I don't think they had like 100 Zoom. I think it was like 50 to 200. Yeah. So at some point, I was getting like lessons from some guy on Reddit, and I jumped to 1-2, and I remember doing like it wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be compared to the lower stakes. Like, that's what's weird about it is like we've said before, some of the lower stakes players are probably just as good as like the higher stakes players. They just don't have as much money because of where they live or whatever.
Right.
But I remember the 1-2 Zoom wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. It just, I don't know. I had like a bad tilt problem early on when I played poker. I feel like I've overcome the tilt somewhat. But it's still just like very irritating to me, like getting bad beat after bad beat, or just in the bad situation after bad situation. Like, there's only so much you can handle. So in terms of that aspect of the game, like even being a winning player, do you still kind of get into like downswings or just situations where you're just like emotionally or psychologically just like frustrated?
So yeah, online, because we're getting so many hands and people play a tighter range in general, like you're gonna see more hands and you're gonna get tilted way faster. Like, so let's say live in an hour you play 30 minutes, right? Or you play 30 hands, you might get into one hand that kind of makes you stressful a little bit and you lose it, you kind of tilted, but you know, you're not playing your next hand until like another 15 minutes. Where online, if you're playing Zoom, you just boom, that hand, you know, just slightly tilting you a little bit. Boom, 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 fold, fold, fold. You go to the next hand, you get tilted a little bit more, you know, and it gradually adds up very quickly. Like in the half an hour, you can tilt your ass off. Like, so yeah. Regarding me, last month when I went back to Vietnam, I actually still tilt. Like, I was playing in the beginning, I was playing like very small stakes. I couldn't find big games, and I was playing like No Limit 100, and I remember I had like 10 hands where I was 75% favorite and I just kept losing those like 10 in a row. And that's when I started tilting. Like, I knew I was tilting. Like I was tilting. I had this hand where I had ace king. This guy raises and he calls my three bet. Flop comes like ace 7-3. And he checks, I bet, and he re-raises. And like, usually this is a set, like almost always, because like there's no draws on this board, and like people are just like they don't bluff on like ace high boards, because the three better usually has an ace, you know. It's usually they have a set and they want to get value. And I know this, like, but I still call. I'm like, all right, I'll just call once. Then I call and a king comes. I improved to two pair, but I'm still losing to the set. He bets and I'm like, fine, I'll call once more. I mean, long story short, he bets three straights and I pay him off and he has a set. And like, that was from tilting, you know, like the prior hands. If I wasn't tilted, I probably just fold flop. Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's still somewhat of a crazy fold because I mean,
I make those folds all the time.
Okay. So, in order to win online, you pretty much have to be able to fold ace king, ace high flop.
Actually,
to a check raise.
This was on the app, and people are playing more like live poker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, since it was on the app, you maybe shouldn't fold, right? Because maybe they don't know what they're doing, or maybe they're doing it with ace queen, or like,
no,
I don't even know.
In the end, he had a set.
Like on the app in general, that's what's kind of weird about playing all the different games too, is like you might be used to playing live where it's like, oh, this person just doesn't know what he's doing, and then you're online and it's like suddenly like you almost have to be aware of, you know, where what you're playing online, what, or then also app games online. So getting into the more of the strategy kind of situations like that. But so, like I said before, like I think the easy answer for me would be to be like play live. But like I said before, if you don't have time, and like, okay. So part of the reason why I love poker and I like having professional poker players on here is because when I first started playing poker, it was my dream, just like it was yours, to be like, if I could just play professional online poker, that's a dream job. I could do it from home. I could do it from anywhere, essentially, with Wi-Fi. Right. I don't really have to go to a casino and sit next to like 9 annoying people. So yeah, that's part of the reason. So in terms of strategy, can we go over some, like, I would say basic strategy, but maybe even more in-depth strategy for playing online? But like we've said before, I think that most people who know poker could probably beat live. Like, it just, like, sometimes at 1-2, as you know, you'll sit down with just a bunch of fish or old man coffees or whatever, and it's like all you have to do is just wait for the premium hand and like get it all in. But let's go over some more technical skills for online, like a situation that you just said, you folding the flop there, which you wouldn't do that live, right? I'm assuming you wouldn't fold there live.
Right? Actually, it depends on like what player. If I know the player and I know he's like he's always raising sets there, I'll fold. Like, I've made some like outrageous folds before just to save. Like, saving money is like winning money, you know. If you never get stacked there, you never lose there. And when you have the set and they have the ace king, you win money there. That's really how you win, you know. You have to make big folds a lot, in my opinion.
But that's just such a tough situation to even get in. Like, I just don't even feel like I get into those situations very much. And like, obviously, when you do have the set versus the ace king there, you really should get it all in. Like, I, in my opinion, like, you're good enough to fold the ace king, but most people, I don't feel like, probably are. This was during COVID. I got like a guy from Reddit to coach me. He showed me a sample size and all that. And his strategy mainly revolved around this. He was basically saying, like, if, first of all, you play your ranges, you know, he gave me like the pre-flop ranges or whatever. But then if the flop comes, I want to say if the flop comes, so you raise pre-flop, they call, whatever. If the flop comes like ace or king or ace king or whatever, ace heavy, like, you down bet the flop. And then on the turn, he said to bet bigger. And that's, I think that was like regardless of what you had. But then he said if it was like lower cards, kind of like 7, 8, 9 type hand or flops, he was saying to overbet the flop and then just kind of give up. Like, is this kind of like a valid strategy? And like, does this type of strategy make sense to you? Or I guess just, I shouldn't even really, I was just more wondering if he knew what he was talking about. But in terms of your strategy, what is your strategy if you're playing online in like a 1-2 Zoom? And I'm assuming when you play 1-2 Zoom, you probably play 2 tables, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay. So what's your overall strategy if you can kind of like summarize it? I know that's hard to do, but
yeah, I mean, so 1-2 Zoom on Ignition, you kind of just got to play like solid ranges. Like, the game is tougher. So like, it's really mostly, if you're not on the button, whatever your hand you're entering, you're usually three betting or folding. Like let's say hijack opens and you wanna play like 10 jack suited, you're not gonna flat. You're gonna three bet. Because if you don't three bet when you call the button, if he has a hand like, you know, pocket eights or 10 jack suited himself, he's gonna three bet. And then you're gonna have to either be forced out of the hand or play, you know, out of position in a three bet pot without initiative. So whenever you're playing, you're always going to three bet most of the time when you get into the pot. Pre-flop, yeah.
Is that also in position, or is that, would that also be maybe out of position?
In position, or the only time where you flat is when you're on the button, actually, or the big blind. Okay. If you're small blind and you're continuing, like your whole range is going to be three bets. Yeah.
Okay. And what is your range pre-flop? Would it be like 10 jack suited and up, or do you play ace x suited, like suited connectors below 10 jack suited?
So it depends on where he's opening and when, where your position is. So like, let's say he opens in early position and you're next to act, which means you're in the hijack, right? In the six max. Your range would be pretty tight there. Like, probably like pocket eights and up, and all the suited broadways, and add in some like suited ace five, ace four, yeah, for your three betting range, like your whole continuing range right there.
Okay, so basically three bet pretty much almost always, unless you're on the button or big blind,
right?
I'm trying to, it's kind of hard to go over like situations because there's so many, like obviously there's so many different situations you can do, but mm-hmm. Okay, let's just go over the 10 jack suited hand. Let's just say the under the gun opens, you three bet 10 jack suited, he calls, you completely miss the flop, he checks, you bet. What do you usually down bet there, like 1/4 or like 1/3 or something?
It depends on the flop. So if the flop is ace high or king high, usually you're always going to bet 1/3 pot, because like you have the range advantage on those boards. Like any high card board, you got the range advantage. You're the one who, like, let's say on an ace king board, like you're the only one who can have ace king. Most of the ace kings, and then aces and kings, because like he's always three betting those hands. Right? He's always four betting those hands, right? So he can't have like the nut advantage on those boards. You're the only one who can have top set, middle set, and stuff like that. So when you have the nut advantage, their hand is drawing very thin versus your range. So you want to down bet it like really small, you know, because their hand, like, it's not going to catch up that often on those boards. But like, okay, if a board is like 5, 6, 7, you're probably going to want to check back those flops a lot, because you're not three betting the pocket fives, pocket six, pocket sevens very often, or you shouldn't be. Whereas he's raised calling those hands a lot. So he has the nut advantage on those boards. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So when you, let's just say it's, you know, you have the 10 jack, you're in position, you three bet pre, it comes ace king deuce or whatever, he checks, you down bet, and then he calls, and then you completely miss the turn, and he checks. Do you bet again there? Like I was saying before, like will you over bet at that point, or maybe like bet pot or whatever, or will you just kind of give up at that point?
Yeah, you're gonna fire a third bearer, setting up for a river jam for sure.
That's almost like a guarantee. Is it almost a guarantee that you just have to go for it in that situation, kind of?
Oh, yeah, because your hand has no showdown. You still have a gut shot to the nuts. And on that board with 10-jack, you definitely want to go for three straights right there.
See, that just seems kind of like somewhat like almost suicidal to me. Because like, I've been in situations where like I will get the call down from like some weird – that it goes back to that situation I was saying before where like – I feel like the guy shouldn't even been in the hand with the ace seven suited or something. And then he just check calls you the whole way. I mean, obviously he should fold. So it's one of those situations where it's like, he's misplaying the hand and technically he should fold and you should win, I guess.
You know, when you're bluffing, it's like, you don't have to always win, you know, like you only need to win like 50% of the time to actually even make a profit. And like, like sometimes you can get a feel for it, like the way the guy's calling too fast, like you feel like, oh yeah, this guy's not giving up, then you can give up on the river too. But at least fire two barrels, you know.
Okay. And yeah. In terms of, you know, obviously, like nowadays, like I'm still kind of like somewhat old school, but I learned back in, you know, Phil Hellmuth old school, like that book he wrote a long time ago, like 2005, 2010 yeah. era.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
where
yeah.
it was just like play your hands, play them solid, which like I said before, works live, but online doesn't seem to work. In terms of range, that's a kind of like a newer thing, and you just kind of covered it a little bit. But are there any more things that I should know, being someone who doesn't know too much about ranges? Just in general, kind of like range betting and all that kind of stuff. Like, or is it kind of just simple, you know, if it's ace king, like, and you're the three better, yeah, or even yeah. the only original razor.
Yeah. So you just kind of like, yeah, if you want to get like a general feel for every spot, for every, just every situation, even like in single race pots, right? You just kind of look at the board's texture and think like, okay, what are the strongest hands that I have on this board? And do I even have those? And then can my opponent have those hands or not? Like, which person does it favor? Let's say you open under the gun and the big blind defense. And, you know, the flop is 4-5, 4-5, 8, right? Like, he's going to have more like 6-7 offsuit that he defends, right? Where you're not going to raise 6-7 offsuit from under the gun. So he's going to have more straights than you, and he'll have the nut advantage. You still have like the same set advantages, but you won't, he'll have to pairs 4-5 suited, whereas you won't raise those hands from under the gun ever. If you're playing correctly, right? You're not going to raise 8-5 suited under the gun or 6-7. Yeah. So on that board, you kind of think about that and you're like, okay, so he has the nut advantage on this board. So when I bet and he check raises, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble because he can have the nuts in those hands and I can't. So you kind of want to realize that. And if your opponent is an aggressive check raiser, you kind of want to check back those flops so you don't get put in tough spots like that. And then if you're versus a knit, you can always bet too, and then bet with the intention of folding, knowing the knit's only going to raise two pair of flush. You know, you see what I'm getting at here?
Yeah, yeah. And is there ever situations where like people can like do the reverse of the potential range betting thing? Like maybe like they're supposed to three bet or four bet you with ace king, but they'll intentionally kind of just call with ace king, and then when ace king comes, like you'll think, oh, I have the range advantage here, and it's like, no, they just didn't four bet pre or whatever with ace king, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's good to flat ace king too, like, but yeah, this is just general like rules. It's nothing is set in stone. You'll have fishes who would never three bet ace king because they don't like that hand and they don't want to play, you know, a big pot unless they hit. So if you play against
That's like me. Like I'm,
yeah.
I've never really been into ace king, but it's like I feel like it's the type of situation where, like, if I miss, I don't know if it comes queen high or whatever. It just kind of like irritates me, and then it seems like if I miss the whole way, I'm just kind of like I end up giving up, and I'm just like pissed. But overall, yeah. I know that it's like a hand that you should play aggressively and raise. Exactly. But yeah,
so you know what that feeling is like. So you know some players are gonna be like that. So you know you have to respect them when they raise on that board too, because you know like. Not everybody's the same, you know. It's yeah. just a general rule, right? Like if you're playing against Old Man Coffee and he's raising on ace king, like you know he might have pocket kings even, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also, so in terms of bankroll and stuff like that, what kind of bankroll should you have? Let's just say you're playing 1-2 live, you're buying in for $100, that's like the max or whatever.
200.
What should my bankroll be? Or just in general, if you can give like an overall view of like how much you should be playing.
So usually do you go to the casino and play 1-3, 1-2? And what's the buy-in like?
So 1-2, it's 100 max. It's like a low buy-in. It's like 50%. Really? Yeah, it's
only 50
weird.
Big blinds? Wow. I don't think you should play that game, dude.
Well, for some reason, that's just like a normal thing here in Southern California. Like if you've ever played in Southern California, the 1-2 is always 100. It's a weird thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
1-3... Yeah, 1-3 will be 100 to 300. So you will be able to buy in for 100 big blinds there. I honestly, like, I've done pretty good at 1-2. Like, I'll just, like, one strategy I'll do at 1-2 is, even though you're not supposed to limp pre, if I see that everybody's limping pre, sometimes I will limp pre with like a mediocre hand, wait till I hit two pair better, and then just try and get it all in. But yeah, in general, I don't like buying in for 50 big blinds. But yeah, yeah, it's unfortunately a situation you have to do. So in situations, let's just say 1-2 or 1-3, whatever you want to talk about, you're either buying for 100 or you're buying for 300. What should your bankroll be? Like, how much money should I have saved to even go into these games?
Like, if you're professional, you need like 6K at least. But if you're just playing like once in a while, I suggest you come in with two buy-ins, so you can play your first buy-in and you're like, you're not afraid to go bust, you know what I mean? Like, if you come there with only one buy-in and you haven't come in a while, you kind of don't want to bust on your first or second hand, right? Because then you have to get up and go home.
Yeah.
So you don't want that mentality while playing, because that's obviously very bad, you know. You're gonna make worse decisions and shit like that. You're gonna be scared. Like, you might know that, oh yeah, I think I should call this guy down, but what if I lose and I have to go home, you know? You're kind of in that mentality. So I always suggest getting two buy-ins. So the first buy-in you can play, you can always be like, well, I'm going to go broke here. I can always reload, you know?
Do you ever feel like, what's the max amount that you should go with, that you should be willing? How many buy-ins should you be willing to lose before you stop? Like, maybe three or something?
Yeah, I think three is a good rule for most people, you know?
Yeah.
After that,
that's usually what I do.
Already.
Yeah, that's normally what I do. I normally will go, when I was going, I would normally go with 300, buy in for 100. And I know that's still short, but I like the 1-2 game. I don't really want to buy in for 300 at the 1-3, you know? And so, it's a lot more aggressive at 1-3 too.
Yeah, yeah. So the reason why the 1-2 game is like almost unbeatable is, it's not because you can't beat it, but it's because the rake is so fucking high. Like, the rake in Southern California is like $7, right?
I think so. It's been a while since I've actually checked on that. I know when I was playing regularly, it was more like 5, maybe 6, but they would add the, like, the jackpot dollar or whatever that they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, the jackpot, the drop, which makes it like 6 or 7, I remember.
Yeah. So, let's just say you got somebody like me, or you got somebody listening who, I don't have a whole lot of money. Like,
right.
I don't have a whole lot of time. Ideally, I just kind of want to play online. But what do you think my best option is? We said before, like, Ignition, it's tough even at the $5 level. So it's like, I mean, I guess the option would be either like learn and get extremely good.
Right. So I'll give you the suggestion for what you should do to eventually find success in this game, right? That's what you want to do, right?
Yeah.
Eventually be able to go to a casino and kind of play and know that you're plus EV and just make money on the side eventually, right?
Yeah. Well, like I said before, like, I would want to go play live, but I think it's just like a time thing. You know what I mean? It's like, I just, if I don't have the, like, I can play whenever I want, like, online.
Right.
But it's just so, yeah. I mean, mainly I kind of want to focus on online. What do you think the best way to beat it is? But you can go over live too.
Yeah. So honestly, like, to win money online poker right now is a lot of skill. Like, it's a lot of work. I don't think like the average person has the time and energy to actually even achieve it. You know what I mean? Like, I've played professionally for a long time now, and I can't see myself grinding a lot online, like, on the big card rooms, like, to make a decent living, even if I tried, like, really hard, is what I'm saying. So,
yeah. So, basically, because, online, know, like, just shouldn't even be an option. What about those app games? So, like, you said you were making you made 7K on that app game. How would I get involved with an app game like that? Do you have to know the person to be able to get in on it, or?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, like Rampage Poker, Mariano, they have those like app games too.
What are they on? Do you know what apps are they on?
Things like GG Poker or something like that. But I don't know the rate structure on there, but generally the app games are going to be softer because grinders, they use head-up displays, you know, to get the stats like VIP, three-bet stats. And you can't get that on the app usually. So
yeah,
grinders are not really grinding apps as much. It's more efficient. If you want to get into that, you kind of need to know a person because, you know, the depositing and withdrawing, you kind of have to trust somebody with that.
Yeah. Well, like I told you before, I found some app games to play on, and like they were legit. They were paying me out. I actually know a guy who his friend had an app game, so I played on there, and they weren't very good. But the problem was is that they were playing 1-2, but these guys had so much money that like I would buy in for 100 to 200, and they had so much money that they were like just kind of bullying me around. You know what I mean? It was like, I remember getting in some situations where like I had really premium hands. I had like kings, you know, a couple of times, and then ace flopped, and they were so aggressive that they just kept betting. I ended up losing a lot of money quick. And on those app games, it's hard to find lower stakes.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I guess that's just like my issue. Like if I don't have the money to play, maybe I just shouldn't be playing. And that is why I eventually stopped. But I just didn't have the bankroll for it, even for 1-2 online on the app games. But yeah, so in terms of, I know I'm kind of like,
I know what you mean. I know what you're trying to get to. Look, from my view of how you're talking about poker right now, I think if you want to start beating the games, you gotta first like, okay, this year, how many hours can you put into poker to actually study and get good at the game, right? Your goal right now is you have to play a lot of hands at low stakes, like 5 cent, 10 cent, 10 cent, 25 cent, at a stake where losing to you doesn't really matter that much. Where you can have like let's say you can save up $1,000, right? You'll have 100 buy-ins for 5 cent, 10 cent. And, you know, the money is not that big, but it's still kind of good. Like, okay, cool. I stacked a guy for 10 bucks. That's not bad. You know, like I can buy coffee with it or some shit. Yeah, you need to have that right now. Like, just play like 4 tables of 5 cent, 10 cent, or 2 tables, whatever. Get reps in. Like, you need 1,000 hours online just to get like all this. Like, you, like, can you calculate like odds and stuff like that? You know, all the basics, like how often you flop a set. You know, let's say you have a combo draw. Like, can you calculate on the fly? Like, you have king jack suited on 9, 9, 10, 3, and it's 2 of your suits. Like, do you know how much equity you have against certain hands? Like, things like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was, well, and in terms of, let's just say I was playing 5 cent, 10 cent, would you say to play Zoom, or would you say to play just regular cash, or like how many tables?
Yeah, I would say like 4 tables of regular, just so you can start like getting a feel of how to pick up reads on certain players. Because if you play Zoom, it's going to be different players a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of want to start like developing that sense of, okay, this guy's playing like this, getting a read kind of.
Yeah. And then in terms of studying, who are some good, I've watched some of like Bart Hansen stuff. I've listened to a little bit of like Jonathan Little. Yeah, I've listened to a little bit of like, you know, almost everybody, Matt Berkey's podcast or whatever.
They're all good. Like, any of their courses will help you beat the stakes you're trying to beat for sure. Like all the basics that they're trying to teach is spot on, you know? So
yeah,
they're all good. Yeah.
In terms of how you study, how do you study?
So when I first started, there wasn't that many training tools online, you know, I had to like Google everything, find hella shit, but now it's so easy. You can just sign up for an Upswing course and start learning from there, from their basics, you know, for $50 a month.
Have you done Upswing?
Yeah, actually, when I started winning for my first 3 months, I was still not very good, you know, like I was just a nit, like just nut pedaling, you know, sitting there waiting for sets and shit to make money, right? I didn't even have like a good concept of a good like opening range. And I remember like after 3 months, I already made like 20K, but I downloaded the Upswing pre-flop charts they had. And I looked at it and I'm like, wow, I'm really bad. Like, I didn't even know this. And then I started following the charts and like, I started winning a lot more, like just the pre-flop charts, you know, just getting it down like to the T is like already improving my game so much at that point. It's crazy. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so what about tournaments too? Do you recommend playing online? Because I've heard online tournaments and I have played some of them and they do seem to be easier, or even sit and goes. At some point I was actually playing heads up sit and goes and doing pretty good because those players weren't as good as the cash game players either. So what do you think about tournaments?
Yeah. I mean, tournaments, I suggest you shouldn't go down that route, honestly. Like right now you got to focus on one form of poker, right? If you're focusing on too much, it's just way too much to study. And it's just because like tournaments and cash games, they require different ranges. In tournaments, there's antes. So the pot's going to be bigger. And then stack sizes, everybody's shorter due to the increasing stack sizes. So you're going to play more hands. The range is going to be way different than in cash games. And if you're studying two ranges at the same time, it's going to be like way too much. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Overflow. Yeah.
One problem I had with the tournaments is like I was like, oh, I'm not doing great at cash online. Maybe I should do tournaments. And I noticed that they were easier. And I think that I even got like second place in one small one. But it was like, my big problem with it was like I didn't want to wait the 3 hours. Like, let's just say I started playing and then like an hour or two in, I saw that there was still like 300 players left. I was like, man, I don't really want to play another hour or two or three, you know. Yeah. So that's my big problem with tournaments, but I know the payoff can be good. So
waste of time, dude.
Yeah, well, no, I feel that way, but it's like they are easier online, you know what I mean, than the cash games. But yeah,
it's easier because the players are worse for sure, but the money made from tournaments, actually in the long run, you'll see that it's not that great. Like, even if you're beating a tournament, your ROI is going to be 20-30%. So for even like a $100 tournament, every $100 tournament you play, you're making $30 per tournament. If you're good enough, like if you're beating the game, like crushing it, your ROI is 30%. So you're playing that tournament for like 8 hours until you cash, right? Or 4 hours at least. And you made $30. So every hour you made like $5 or $6 or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the win rate you can achieve in the $100 tournament. Which is pretty, the skill level is pretty high already online for a $100 tournament.
Yeah.
And then, like, once you transition that into live arena, like, tournaments, man, once you cash, you're going to pay taxes on that shit, like, a lot. And it's not as lucrative as people think. Like, let's say you, like, the variance in tournaments was so fucking high, right? $1,000, 1,000 people tournament. You're going to win it once or twice in 1,000 tournaments. That's the reality. That's the chances you're supposed to have. And you're not going to play like 2,000 tournaments in a year, right? In live tournaments. So let's say you play for 3 years and you find, or 5 years, and you're not making much in a year. You're making like 10,000, 20,000, let's say that, just for example. And then on your fifth year, you bank like a 500K tournament, right? And that's like, it brings all your income back. So basically you made 500K over 5 years and averaged 100K a year, which sounds awesome, right? It's not that bad. However, on the year that you bank 500K, you're paying taxes on that shit, on the whole 500K. So you really only gonna bring home like 300K. Whereas the years that you didn't make any money, you know, like there's going to be years that you lost too. They don't calculate that in, you know what I mean? Like you might bank 500K this year, lost 100K the other year, but you're not paying tax on 400K over 2 years. You're paying tax on 500K in 1 year. Whereas the year where you lost 100K, like nobody's paying you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. One nice thing about not playing for like a living or whatever is like I don't have to pay like taxes on it, you know, because it's like such a small amount. But yeah, right. I see what you're saying. So in terms of the cheating online, and it sounds like the answer really is just like from you, and I've heard this from other people too, is just to play live. But in terms of the cheating online, do you think that there is cheating online? And I've actually heard theories that, like, if other people are cheating online, which we know that they probably are, or maybe not even cheating, but maybe having those graphs or whatever, those, what do they call them? The heads up displays or whatever.
Yeah. Head up
display. And all that. Like, do you think there is cheating? And if you do think that there is cheating, do you also think that, like, maybe, I don't want to say maybe you should cheat, but like, maybe you should have all the information up or whatever, because other people are doing it too. Like, how do you feel about that type of thing?
Yeah, I think you should. Like, I recommend you download the app called Solver Plus.
Yeah.
It's an app where you can get like pre-flop charts. Like, okay, from this position, I should open this. If I get 3-bet from this position, what hand should I call with? Like, it has all that. And I suggest you have that open while you're training your 5-cent, 10-cent, whatever, this year. Have that right beside you and train with it, like, so you get down the ranges, you know. That's going to improve you a lot, buddy. Like, if you listen to me and play 5-cent, 10-cent with the charts right next to you and just get that down to 1,000 hours, after that, you go live and you play 2-5, you're going to crush it, bro. Like, you're gonna be like, oh shit, people are so bad. Like,
even online.
No, live.
Oh, live. Okay, yeah, but I mean, yeah. in terms of online, like, well, like with that app, is that like an iPhone app, or like can you have that app on your computer too?
Yeah, it's an iPhone app. If you have a MacBook, you can get it on your Mac too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, in terms of some of the players that like you look up to, who you think are really good, or you just like watching, or any players that you've actually, even professionals that you've played with that we would know the names of, who are some of those guys?
I mean, some of my friends are pretty good, but if you want to watch the stream games, like, or the vloggers, like Mariano knows what he's talking about. Andrew Newman, pretty good. If you watch the Trident High Rollers, like almost all the players are good, like the Euros, you know, like Makita, Linus Lolliger, like those guys are fucking insane good. Like, you can learn a lot from them. The Trident High Roller cash games, if you can watch those replays. And then Poker Girl has a recent No Gamble, No Future cash game. I don't know if you know about that.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Go watch some of those streams and learn from Patrick Antonius and Andrew Robo. And that Mexican dude, I forgot his name. But yeah, those three are probably pretty good. Like Andrew Robo, he's like very studied and also very exploitative. Like, you know, like he knows his GTO shit, but he exploits the shit out of people. Like, he's really good. Patrick Antonius is good too. Like, yeah. Watch those.
But hasn't Patrick Antonius, I feel like he's gotten like worse. He seems to be like more splashy now than he used to be. Like, he's been doing some weird stuff I've noticed online recently.
I mean, he's probably not as good compared to the field as he was back then 10 years ago, you know. Like, yeah. People have gotten really good right now, so he's not playing with the fishes he used to play with. But I would say like he's still improving and good enough to learn from.
Yeah. And what do you think about like Tom Dwan, Doug Pohl, Brad Owen, Matt Berkey, those types of guys? You think they're all good too?
Honestly, Brad Owen is mediocre. I mean, if you watch the last three streams, he kind of shown like he tilt a lot.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah,
it was pretty. It was pretty funny. It was pretty fun to watch. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was like he actually tilted so much that he ended up shoving 7 deuce.
Yeah.
Into aces.
Yeah.
And the guy with aces, he's the action player. Like, he's the fish at the table. Like, you're supposed to be the pro with the aces. He's supposed to be the guy with the 7 deuce. And now you're the guy with the 7 deuce. Oh my god, it was crazy. But yeah, I don't think you should learn much from Brad Owen, to be honest. Like. Doug Pohl is good, but sometimes he's a little too aggressive just to keep up with his image for upswing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there will be spots where it's like a 4-bet or a fold, And he might feel inside that, oh, yeah, I probably should fold, but he'll take the four bet line just to prove that, you know, you can four bet these hands. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. He's kind of playing not to his own level, but kind of because he has a brand that he has to keep up with. Now, sometimes he's playing bad, but he's a good player for sure. Like,
very yeah. good.
I admire him for sure. Yeah.
What about like Garrett Adelstein, Berkey, or Nick Airball is kind of like a new guy that's been playing pretty crazy. You know him, Nick Airball?
Yeah. Nick Airball, he's like his ranges are a little too wide, way too wide. But like he's good post flop. Like he's very good post flop, I think. And he talks a lot of shit. So he kind of like uses that to his advantage that people pay him off more. Because he tells them, you know what I mean? Like, everybody hates him. So, like, they kind of don't want to fold to him when he has a big hand. So, that allows him to play, like, a little wider. Because then he'll hit, like, weird two pairs and shit. And he might get value from those.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't suggest you, like, mimic him or study his style or anything. Because it's not, like, solid fundamentals, you know?
Yeah. And then do you ever break away from the preflop ranges? Like, is there ever situations where you're like, I know that I probably shouldn't raise here with this hand, but I'm going to anyways? Or do you always just play the exact correct ranges pre-flop?
So the ranges pre-flop is like something you need to learn to have a baseline, right? Then you know that, okay, if everybody's playing good, exactly good, this is what I should do in this spot. But then you deviate from it based on the players that you're playing against. And that's where like exploitative comes in, you know. But you're not going to be able to exploit somebody if you don't know the baseline strategy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, let's say that you're supposed to raise the cutoff ace nine offsuit plus, right? But the button is a nit who doesn't play that many hands. He doesn't three bet a lot, and he's going to fold a lot more than often. Then maybe you can raise ace eight. Because you're not going to get three bet that much, and you're not going to get flat that much because he's a nit, right?
Yeah,
he's not playing as often as he should, so you can open your range instead of like, oh, maybe it's a queen jack offsuit is the, or a queen ten offsuit. Then you can maybe add in queen nine. You know, just add a little bit more because the guy on your left is not three betting you enough. And then if he's a crazy guy who three bets a lot and he's putting you in tough spots, then maybe you want to tighten up instead of raising ace nine, you only raise ace 10 and above. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah. And like in terms of, would you say like if you don't really know the exact ranges and you go to play live, you're just kind of like a recreational player, but you want to play by the book as much as possible. Would you kind of say like playing tighter preflop is probably the way to go? Like the tighter you're playing, probably better, right?
Yeah. You kind of want to learn the nit style first. Because of the rake, the small pots are not that worth it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're getting raked like so hard that winning the small pots, the marginal pots, that it's not worth it. You want to just win big pots and then, or not win pots at all. You know, you don't want to enter a pot to win like $5 or $6 and get raked out of it. So when I play live, like especially low stakes, like sometimes, like I'm playing 1-3, right? But sometimes I'll get put in, all the games are four and I play 1-2. I'm just waiting, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I sit the 1-2 game and I play extremely tighter because of the rake. Like, I'm just waiting for premiums, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said before, a lot of times that will work live. Like, it won't work online, probably. Like, you just won't get paid off. But if you just wait for the premium hand and get it all in when you're ahead, like, it'll work.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of like Garrett Adelstein, you know, obviously we've seen him play really kind of not GTO. Maybe you could call it, you would probably call it exploitative. In terms of that style, like when he's doing something weird, it's like, wow, I have no clue what this guy is doing or why he's doing it. Do you think it's because he just has such a good read on his opponents that are, but some of his plays don't even seem to really make sense. Like even the one where he was against Robbie Jade, where he thought she was cheating.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he did have the straight flush draw, it still seemed insane to me for him just to go all in there, because it was like, okay, what if she really does just have whatever the trips were, like 9, 10, or 9, 10, 10 or whatever it was. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems so dangerous for him to go all in there, but like, she could really just have the hand there. Like, and what do you think is going through his head in situations like that?
Well, his hand has a lot of equity regardless against like her calling range. You know, he has a straight flush draw. So even if he gets called, he's going to have at least 30% is what he thinks.
Is it that much? I would think that if he needs the straight flush, he would need two cards, right? Essentially. For the straight flush, if that's what he needs.
Right. Oh, you mean like against if she had trips?
If she had trips or better, or
what even was the board again? I can't remember.
I want to say it was like 9, 9, 10 or 9, 10, 10. I know it's, you probably don't know the whole like,
yeah,
everything that happened, and I don't either. I think it might have been like 9, 9, 10, 3, but she thought she had the three.
Yeah.
So I mean, how does he know she just doesn't really have the 9, 10 there? She doesn't have the 9. You know what I mean? Like, it's
Well, because actually, yeah, it's an exploit for sure, because she didn't check raise the flop. She didn't raise him on the flop. And Robbie, like, she's the type of player who raises her value a lot on the flop.
Yeah,
like she would on that draw heavy board. Like, if she had trips, she'll always raise for sure. If there's one hand on the bike where she has pocket queens, she gets 3-bet. The guy she calls, flop is like queen 7-3. She checks, the guy bets, and with top set, she raises all in. So she's the type of player, even on that board, like it's so dry, you know. You have top set, like you should never go all in. You should never raise her. And if you do, it's supposed to be small. She still check raises on. Like, she doesn't know what she's doing. When she has value, she's going for it. But
even the problem with that is, like, I know that she's probably not smart enough of a player to, like, to switch it up. But if you get involved with somebody who is switching it up,
right?
Maybe she's doing that intention. Maybe she's, like, sometimes she will raise, sometimes she won't. I don't know. His style of play to me seems very dangerous, but obviously he is probably – he's the most winning player of that whole group, I think. So yeah, obviously yeah. Working, but yeah.
Like Garrett,
he's
very studied. Like he came from online, you know. He knows his GTO ranges and stuff. He's like when he exploiting, he knows he's exploiting. It's not like he doesn't study GTO, you know. He's very studied, sure. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of you, would you say you try to play totally GTO, exploitative, both? What do you think is the best way to go?
I actually only got into like GTO recently this year when I started playing the Zoom games.
Yeah.
Yeah. So honestly, I've always been like more exploitative, and it's really suits me well in live poker, but I still like to learn GTO, you know, like so I can battle with the good players. Like, you're not going to be able to exploit the good players, but you're going to have to battle them if you want to sit in a good game. Like in a big game, there's always going to be at least like 5 pros or 2 pros or 4 pros and then like 3 whales, you know? And if you want to sit there and win against the whales, you got to know the GTO style to combat and play, break even with the other pros, you know, while you're in the hand with them. Yeah.
Yeah. And do you believe in it? You know, I mean, obviously it's like kind of a joke, but like the whole white magic thing with like Phil Hellmuth, do you believe that there is kind of like maybe not Phil Hellmuth's version of white magic, but do you feel like there is some sort of kind of like intuitive sense that you could like read somebody's
mind?
Or like, you believe in that kind of thing?
Yeah, I do, because like in live poker, it's not just like the cards still matter, the strategy still matters, but there's an element of human people in it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there are, it's like live tells are real, you know, emotions are real, distractions are real, like. Some players, you know, they only go to the casino on that certain day when that certain waitress is working. Like, they're there to see the waitress, basically.
Yeah.
So if you know that and the waitress is around, like, you know, he's going to be, his mind is going to be on her at the moment. Like, he's not focusing on the hand.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he's so fucking focused on the hand. Like, you know he's got a big hand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have a margin. Like, so things like that.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a lot of tells in live poker, actually. Like, let's say you, when people have a big hand and they're going to, they're playing a big pot and they think they're going to win it, it's like, it's almost impossible to control the excitement, and the breathing starts going up, and it's like, it still happens to me, you know, like, oh shit, I got set in a 3-bet pot and the guy's betting big. It's like, oh, I'm going to win a huge one. Start breathing. Yeah. Like, you can look for that in live poker, and it's very reliable, like live tells.
Yeah. Yeah. And in terms of, like I've played, I'll go to the casino and play 1-2. And like you just said, you're playing against guys who just don't really give a shit. They're there for the waitress, or they're just there to have fun. And I've played against guys who literally, when the river comes, they'll literally just lean back and sigh and basically just be like, take it. And right. I wasn't really talking about that with the white magic stuff. I'm more talking about kind of like literally almost like readings. Like, you're so in tune that you can like almost literally read someone's mind, even if they're like just straight face and like staring you down. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're just, are there people out there who are just so good with psychology that I can just like look into your eyes and you're not really giving anything away? Maybe you're giving like something small away.
Right.
But do you believe in that kind of thing? Almost like reading minds type thing?
I don't think they believe in like reading minds, but more of a reading human behavior kind of thing. If you're playing with a guy enough, you kind of just pick up intuitively on the way he acts or the way he thinks. I want to tell you about this story this story, if you listen to it, if you think it's kind of like white magic. So my friend, this is a true story. My friend was playing against another guy who's kind of like a fish in the sense. And he comes over to start telling me the story. So I know it's kind of like a bad beat story or some shit, right? And he's like, I got jacks. I raised. That player 3-bets me. I call. Flop is 9-3-4. He checks. I bet. He calls. And then the turn is a blank. I check. And he checks. And I go all in. And then once he says that, I stop him and I tell him, okay. And then what happens next is that he tanks. He tanks and tanks and tanks. And then he calls you and he shows you pocket aces. And then my friend's like, how the fuck do you know? Like,
what did your friend have?
My friend had pocket jacks, and he's telling me this story where he jams the turn, right?
Yeah.
And then I interrupt him and I tell him the rest of the story that before he even tells me. I said, the guy tank calls you with aces. And that's what ended up happening.
So somehow you knew what happened.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what do you think about that? Like, were you, do you think it just may have just been like a random thought that like happened to be true? Or do you think you just kind of...
Well, see, that's where like all the experience came in. Like, how would I know that the guy's tanking and then calls, right? Like, that's the part where it's like mind blowing, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Did the other guy just like allow him? Did the other guy raise him at all, or no? Was he just like kind of like trapping him with aces?
See, if the guy was trapping, he wouldn't tank, right? He tank call.
True. Right. Yeah. So what do you think the guy's thinking was? Like, you think that he was like an old man coffee who thought aces might have been cracked or something? Or like,
yeah, so I know this player. The reason why I came up with the conclusion for the story is that's what I'm saying. Like, I know this type of guy. Like, I know he's very action and he 3-bets a lot, but when he has a big hand, he's fearful a lot of the time. And that's the reason why he checked the flop and check called, and then checked the turn and then tank called. He wasn't trapping. He was scared. My friend had pocket nines, basically. He was scared. And how I came to the conclusion for that story is because I knew my friend wanted to tell me something that really pissed him off, right, when he came over. So I knew the only way he would be pissed off is if the guy really tanked for a long time and then showed up with a hand that, like, he, you know, he's like, what the fuck? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes you could just do, like, the, you know, you can just do the math or whatever and, like, you just know that, like, the guy's, your friend's pissed and, like, the other guy tank called a base. I don't know. But, I mean, it does sound like
if I didn't explain that to you, like, from my friend's perspective, it's like, it's kind of like white magic, right? Like, how the fuck
would I know? Yeah. I don't really believe in white magic either. I've heard Garrett Adelstein say he does, like, literally him and Doug Polk were talking about Helmuth, and he was, like, literally saying he does. And I know that some people do believe in that kind of thing. I don't. Like you just said, I think it's more of a situation where, like, you know the player. You're in tune with the story enough to where you can just, like, do the math and be like, okay, he has this or that. But obviously you're not always going to be correct. Like, he could have had kings there, right? Or queens or whatever. But right, yeah. Right. But anyways, yeah. So in terms, I need to wrap it up soon, but in terms of, like, your life now, like, what's your day to day like? Would you say, like, you're enjoying being a professional poker player? Is there a lot of stress that comes with it? Or, like, are you kind of to a point now where, like, you just make enough money to where you're not too stressed?
Yeah. Like, because I don't really have, like, a girlfriend, kid, wife, you know, like, people I have to take care of. And it's just myself. And, you know, I have, like I can live off my bankroll for, like, a couple years, you know, with the way I live, like, frugally.
Yeah.
So, like, even if I don't go to work, I know, oh, yeah, I have money to live. So I'm not in no stress to make money, you know. So when I play, it's kind of like whenever I want, if I want, that kind of thing.
And you're pretty much just playing, like, when you want. Like, you're pretty much trying to hit, like, 40 hours a week. But, like, for the most part, like, you're just going when you want. It's not like a 8 to 5 type thing. Yeah, that's, like, the goal, in my opinion, is to work when you want, to not have to be on some sort of Monday through Friday 8 to 5 schedule where you go into an office or whatever. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, even if, like, if you get into the job, most people are going to have to work to survive. And they have, like, different people have different goals in life, you know. Like, some people, they want to get really rich and save a lot. So that if you're in that mindset, then you're still going to have to work. You know what I mean? Like, you have freedom, but you're still going to be like, oh, shit, I got to work more. I got to make more, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, the stress is kind of just, like, how, if you put it on yourself or not, really. Like, if you don't put stress on yourself, then it's pretty awesome, you know? You can work whenever you want. Like, I just took 2 months and went to Vietnam. Like, if you have a normal job, you can't do that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's
it's always perfect job. Yeah, it's always been something that I've wanted to do, and I've never pulled the trigger on it. There have been a few times where I did try to pull the trigger on it, like times when I was unemployed and I was going to the casino or I was playing online. There was a period of time, not even that long ago, where I was trying to play a little bit online every night, and it just wasn't going good, so I stopped. Right. But so in terms of well, first of all, if there's anything else you want to go over that, like, you got asked in the AMA, because they found you on the doing the AMA on Reddit. And if there's anything else you want to go over, go ahead. Otherwise, if there's anything you want to plug in terms of, it could be poker or not, in terms of, I always ask this at the end, podcasts, movies, TV shows, music, anything that you're into right now, probably ideally, like, maybe some poker content that you listen to that you can learn from, like a good poker podcast or a YouTube channel or whatever. You've already said Mariano and stuff, but, go ahead and just plug away.
I really don't have, like, social media or anything. I'm trying to gain followers, so yeah, I don't really have anything to plug. But yeah, just like the Solver app, so Poker Plus, highly recommend it. It's free. Yeah, if you really want to get good at poker, you should use that. And yeah, man, just grind online. 5 cent, 10 cent, beat that. Really get a hang of the game. And from there, and you should be able to beat the casino games.
know? Yeah. One thing I noticed about 5 cent, 10 cent when I was playing, or even 2 cent, 5 cent or whatever, I played 2 cent, 5 cent all the way up to like 1, 2 online. But one thing I noticed about the lower stakes, it's nice. It's like, you never really have to like worry too much. Like if you have a really big losing session, it's not a big deal.
Exactly.
The only downside to it is I was noticing that like the money, when I was playing, the money just didn't mean that much to me. So I think that I was like overplaying hands. I was playing too many hands, or because like 10 cents just isn't a lot of money to me. But
you got to play with the mindset of the money I'm making is, it proves that I'm beating the game and that I can do this. You know what I mean? So then like every buy-in you win, you're happy. Oh shit, I'm proving myself that I can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of try to put yourself in that perspective.
Yeah. All right. Do you do any type of coaching?
No, but like I said, like I'm happy to, like for me and you, for sure. Like, whatever you want. Like, I'm happy to try to get you to be a winning player. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice of you. And maybe even if I can, I was going to actually ask you off the app, but if I can get in on maybe that app game, I'll talk to you about it afterwards, but just let me know if I'll be able to get in or if I get into another game. All right. Well, it was nice having you on. Happy. This is going to be an audio only podcast. Thanks for coming on. I know it felt kind of rushed because I have one at 1 and this was like totally last minute, but yeah, thanks for coming on. Let me know if you ever want to come back on, and we'll probably be talking offline too. So
yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
It was fun.
No problem. Thank you.
All right.
All right. Bye guys.
Peace out.